The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now on 960 The Patriot, it's the Middle East Radio Forum, your chance to talk about the turmoil in the Middle East. To call in live, dial anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free at 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now your host for the Middle East Radio Forum, Attorney William J. Wolf.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're listening from. It's August 28, 2022. My name is William Wolf. I'm your host today. We're finishing up the 19th year of broadcast in October. So October will start the 20th year of broadcast. Hard to believe, but this program has a life of its own, and I very much appreciate the fact that I have wonderful listeners and advertisers who keep the show going. This show is so important that it's also rebroadcast Saturday evening at 9 p.m. in full. So if you miss it live here, you can catch it Saturday evening, or you can always catch it in the podcast. Podcasts of many old shows are available. Just go to my website, MiddleEastRadioForum.com. Go to the podcast. You can listen to this show and a lot of other shows. We like to keep the information we have available to everybody. The show is available worldwide, of course, on the Internet, my website, again, MiddleEastRadioForum.com. This time of year, it's noon here in Phoenix, also Pacific Daylight Time. Eastern Time is 3 p.m., and it's 10 p.m. in Israel. So please do spread the word about this show. I have a great show for you today. My returning guest is Ken Timmerman, always a terrific presentation. But as usual, we first go to Yoni Titi. Yoni, what do you have to depress me with today?
Oh, and this is very depressing, but we have to deal with it. 2026, will this be the year that brings to Israel multiple strikes with Iranian nuclear weapons? The chances are very high if Brandon and his Marxists have their way and conclude a deal with Iran. David Barnea, the head of the Mossad, said last Thursday that the deal the Americans are pushing defies common sense, that this deal will assure Iran obtains nukes by the latest 2026. For this, our great interim Prime Minister, Yair Lapid, called the head of the Mossad on the carpet for being critical of our masters in D.C. So why in the world do we even have a place called Israel? A place that has had the longest-serving Prime Minister, Bibi, turn us into a model of his great-grandparents' ghetto by building a wall to separate us from the Palestinians. The Palestinians were being mean to us by supporting terrorism and wanting to murder every single one of us and eliminate the Jewish state. So instead of fighting back, bare-knuckled and without rules, the great Bibi built a wall for us to hide behind, just like his family had in Europe. And we know how well that turned out. I despise these ghetto Jews, cowards one and all when it comes to leading Israel. Understand, the physical courage that many of our leaders showed as young men is not the same as moral courage needed to lead the nation to victory over our enemies. Barnea has clearly stated that it is up to Israel to save ourselves from the next Holocaust. But will we? This last week, an attorney for the State of Israel, in a hearing over the status of wounds suffered by a border police officer that were obtained while he was part of a unit that was raiding a terror safe house in East Jerusalem, Arabs started throwing stones at him before they got to the house. A stone hit this border police officer, who, by the way, isn't Jewish, he's a Druze, and it broke his eye orbital bones, his cheek, and his nose. And the attorney for the State of Israel said, "We cannot determine the intent of the Arab that threw the stone, whether this was terrorism or not." Are you kidding me? If it isn't terrorism, I don't know what it is. So the Brandon White House has stated this week that Brandon will use whatever means necessary to deny Iran the bomb. Oh, man, I feel so good already. Wow, Brandon's going to guarantee the Iranians won't have a bomb. I feel all warm and fuzzy, since, of course, the border with Mexico is secure, and crime in the United States is at the lowest level ever, and we have no inflation, and the Marxists that defunded the police are now going to hire 87,000 agents for the IRS, and in the job posting, they stated very clearly that they would be required to use deadly force. What, we're going to start killing Americans if they don't pay their taxes? So Brandon and the Marxists are more serious about building a police state in the USA than hitting Iran. Nope. They want to give Iran hundreds, and the figure I heard is literally multiple hundreds of billions of dollars, and a smooth path to getting nuclear weapons. Israel last Thursday hit an Iranian base in Syria, and we blew up 1,000 rockets. We are going to have to do the same with Iran's nuclear weapons program. Stop being ghetto Jews and fight like King David, for our survival depends on it.
Yoni, thank you very much. I think, you always speak the truth, and the fact is that it's often depressing, but it's something we need to hear. I appreciate very much that you're on the show every week.
All right. Have a great week.
You too. We'll talk to you next week. Ken Timmerman, are you with us?
Hello. How are you, Bill?
Well, I was better before I heard Yoni, but I'm okay. And I know you're an expert on Iran, and I do want to talk about the latest on the Iran nuclear deal and Israel's supposed fierce opposition to it. But we'll get to that later. First, a brief introduction. Actually, I'm going to advise my listeners to Google his name, Kenneth Timmerman, and you can find out much more about it than I can do in a few minutes here. But he's the executive director of the Foundation for Democracy in Iran. He was a Middle East correspondent and expert in the arms trade. He's actually a prisoner in Lebanon in Fatah for 24 days. He's the author of many books, including Countdown to Crisis. Ken, that's where I first found out about you. I read that book, and it scared the heck out of me. I'm really pleased that you've agreed to be on the show multiple times because you're such an expert in this area. You have a new book, though. Why don't you talk about that new book, and then we'll get into some other information.
Sure. Well, the new book is called And the Rest is History, Tales of Hostages, Arms Dealers, Dirty Tricks, and Spies. And if you want to know the real inside skinny, it's how I became a hostage, an arms dealer, and an Israeli spy, among many, many other things. It's a memoir. I have never actually written a memoir before. People have asked me, Ken, how did you manage to do all this stuff? And reported on, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq before anybody had ever heard of it. You were taken prisoner in Beirut. You were born again to your Christian faith. How come you never tell those stories? And so I took the time over the past couple of years to write those stories in what I hope is a very entertaining form, a lively form, a real-life adventure story, if you wish, for people to see another side of the Middle East and another side of recent history. As I say, the stories in the book are from a personal point of view, how I experienced the Middle East while some of those big events were going on, Iran-Contra and Saddam Hussein and the rest, and the rest is history. So this is the inside skinny, and otherwise you can go read the newspapers and the history books.
Okay, you first went to the Middle East in 1982 for the war in Beirut, and at that time you were pro-Palestinian. Now you consider yourself a Christian Zionist. What changed?
That was an event in my life, a monumental metamorphosis, if you wish. I was living on, a left bank intellectual in Paris. I ran a literary magazine out of Shakespeare and Company, full of patriots. I thought I was going to be the next Hemingway, and all of a sudden, I was 28 years old. And I said, I guess it's time to grow up and actually do something instead of just sit here and drink wine and talk about it. And so I got a job as a stringer and went to Beirut. Cleared things with the Palestinians, went to their so-called embassy in Paris, and then again in Athens on my way down there. They welcomed me with open arms, and of course, as soon as I arrived in West Beirut, I was kidnapped off the streets by a Fatah official and thrown into a cell on the ground with 20 other people for 24 days. It was a pretty dramatic experience. The first hours were probably the worst of my life, and I wouldn't wish them on anybody else. You think you're about to be set free again, And then when that iron door closes behind you and you're pushed into the darkness, into a carpet of squid, and the carpet of squid is all those other people who are there on the floor in this underground dungeon. It's something that can bring you very, very close to despair. And I've got to say, that is probably one of the most important lessons that I took out of this, besides understanding that I had a Lord and Savior who was by my side at every single moment. It was that you can cure despair. You can shield yourself from despair with faith, with a belief that what God has planned for you is what's going to happen. And whatever his plan is, it's good. So I didn't know how it was going to end, but ultimately I got over the despair. And after 24 days, I was brought out of there, out of the darkness into the light, literally by an angel of God who came into this prison. There were two Frenchmen who deserved, quote unquote, to be there. They were foreign legionnaires. One of them had planted bombs at the Beirut airport to blow up the Palestinians as they retreated, although they could never figure out what he had done. He didn't talk. And somebody came in at the very end when they were emptying out the prisons and shooting people out in the streets, and the building had collapsed on top of us. Seven of the eight floors had collapsed on top of us. And somebody came in and said, "Are there any French people here?" And I said, well, I kind of flipped a coin in my head mentally, and I said, heads, they take us out and shoot us. And they finally figured out what the other guy did. Tails, I stay here and die like a rat when the building collapses on top of me, or else these 13-year-old kids with Kalashnikovs will just shoot me. So I said, okay, I'm French. And they took us out, and 36 hours later, they did ultimately release us to the French. And the building that we had been in, the last building we had been in, we watched 2 hours later up on the hillside at the French consulate. We watched the Israeli jets blew it into a hole 50 meters into the dirt. And we'd been there just 2 hours before. So I knew God had, by that point, I understood that God had a plan for me, and it wasn't to die in a cellar in Beirut. And he had lifted me up out of the darkness, both spiritually and materially.
Okay, well, why were you pro-Palestinian at one point, and then why are you now a Christian Zionist? That's obviously totally opposition to each other.
Sure. So in 82 in Paris, the entire press corps, both the U.S. press corps, the French press corps, they were all pro-Palestinian. Arafat was the man. He was. This was his Stalingrad, the siege of Beirut. The Israelis were the Goliath, and the Palestinians were David. Right, they had, in the minds and the viewpoint of the press and the way they portrayed this war to the world, it was the inverse of what we normally think of, or what I think of today as Israel's situation. And so after I was released, I kept going back. I didn't just go back to Paris and go back into my hole. I kept going back to the Middle East, first to Israel, then to Egypt, then back to Lebanon, back to Israel, to the West Bank. I lived on the West Bank for a while, and I began to understand what the PLO is actually doing to Palestinians. And I had a really remarkable conversation with a young man in a refugee camp, and we were talking about houses that the Israelis were building and trying to get Palestinians to move into. It was called the Village Leagues at that time. And they built model communities, brand new houses, beautiful, and nobody would go into them. And I said, well, why won't anybody move here? And he said, shh, shh, we can't talk here. And he took me out into an open field in the middle of nowhere, and he said, we can't go in there because the PLO would kill us. They'd kill all of us, not just me. If I moved in, they'd kill my entire family. And I understood at that point that the PLO was actually a mafia organization, not just a terrorist organization, as we call them, handily here, conveniently here in the West, but a mafia organization. And they ruled with a reign of terror, first and foremost, over their own people. And so bit by bit, I began to go back more to Israel. I began to know a lot of Israelis, become friends with Israelis. Ultimately, about 6 years later, I worked for Israeli intelligence briefly to help them get released a hostage in Lebanon, Ron Arad. We failed in that, but I worked with an Israeli legend, a man named Uri Liwani.
And that's why you became a Zionist.
That's right. Over time, I understood through my faith as a Christian that Israel was, in Israel are the origins of Christianity. Jesus was a rabbi first and foremost. He wasn't a Christian. He was a rabbi. And he was teaching the law. And it is in the, they say, there's a saying that he who blesses Israel will be blessed in turn. And I understood the deep, profound truth of that. If we bless Israel, we will be blessed ourselves. If we curse Israel, we will be cursed. And I took that to heart over the years as I studied more and more of the scriptures.
Okay, so what was it like to report on from the Middle East, knowing the danger there all those years ago, and what would it be like doing it today?
It's a very different place today, obviously, and I was doing a very different type of reporting. I was never a pack journalist. I never ran with the pack. I always went off kind of exploring on my own. Every now and then I would join them, you know, to interview some official someplace in Lebanon or Damascus or Taha Valley. But many times I was by myself. And in my book, And the Rest is History, there's a scene that's it's kind of comical in a way, but creepy as well, called Silence in the Hashish Fields. And it talks about coming down in, from Syria, down the mountains from Syria into the Bekaa Valley, which is flat, right, and full of wheat and hashish, and talking with a Syrian soldier who is at a roadblock. And I said, well, come on, I'm here to go see the Palestinians. They're just behind, beyond that roadblock across the field. And he said, no, too dangerous, too much danger. I said, what's going on? And he says, Arafat, very bad man. I said, okay. Well, it was the Palestinians fighting amongst themselves. This was a factional fight amongst the Palestinians. So I tried to get this guy to go with me. He wouldn't go with me. I walked across probably a kilometer across this hashish and wheat field.
10 seconds,
complete,
please.
Complete, utter silence. I was wondering whether people were going to jump up and shoot me out of the silence. Ultimately, I discovered the battle just beyond. It literally leapt into my face.
Okay, I've got to stop you there. We are coming up on the first break of today's show. You're listening to Middle East Radio Forum here on 960 The Patriot. My name is William Wolf. I'm your host today. Please continue to support the show by using the services of the advertisers, and please let them know you're doing so because they advertise on this program. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with Ken Timmerman. Dassault and Macros are my business and personal CPAs for a good reason. Prompt and accurate work means I trust them with all my accounting needs. Conveniently located just off the 51 freeway at 3519 East Shea Boulevard, Suite 122. Give them a call and see what they can do for you. 602-996-8885. That's Dassault and Macros, 602-996-8885. There are a lot of great Mexican restaurants in Phoenix, but I am very particular. When I want the best Mexican lunch or dinner, I head straight to Mi Patio on the southeast corner of 7th Avenue and Osborne. They serve all your favorite dishes and only use pure vegetable oil in their cooking. Mi Patio is sure to become your favorite Mexican restaurant, too. That's Mi Patio Mexican Restaurant on the southeast corner of 7th Avenue and Osborne. Tell them that William Wolf sent you there. Watermark Wealth Strategies and Watermark Wealth Planning offices at 11333 North Scottsdale Road, Suite 295 in Scottsdale has been a loyal sponsor of this program since its start. They specialize in wealth retention, estate, and legacy planning. Watermark has been a leader in the Valley, and its members have been together for over 17 years. Founding partner Carmen Ciccone has over 36 years of experience in tax, investment, and estate planning issues affecting retirees and their assets. They offer comprehensive planning that has helped assist families through the process of identifying client objectives and concerns and constructing a strategic plan to address tax, risk, and legacy issues. Consultations are complimentary, and we encourage you to contact Allison Porter at 480-442-3989 to schedule. Securities offered through Kestra Investment Services, LLC, member FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Kestra Advisory Services, LLC, an affiliate of Kestra Investment Services. Watermark Wealth Strategies, LLC, is not affiliated with Kestra Investment Services or Kestra Advisory Services. How do you choose your accident injury attorney? If you need heart surgery, do you choose your surgeon from seeing an ad on TV or a billboard? Of course not. Choosing your attorney also should not be done so casually and without thought. I do not advertise on TV or billboards, but only on this radio show. I give all clients personal attention. Your phone calls are never intercepted by some untrained assistant. I take all calls if I am available or return calls at my earliest opportunity. I was named Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association 2 years ago and have 48 years of experience. So think about it and choose your accident attorney wisely. My number is 602-279-1914, and my office is located at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. I personally welcome your call. Again, 602-279-1914.
You're listening to the Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now back to your host, Attorney William J. Wolf.
Welcome back to today's very interesting edition of Middle East Radio Forum. My name is William Wolf. My guest is Ken Timmerman. He's been on the show many times. Always welcome to be here. And Ken, if you had some thoughts that you were talking about when they were talking about Arafat, please continue that, and then I'll ask you some more questions.
Yeah, well, Arafat was quite a thug. And I was there in Damascus when he was the Assyrians tried to kill him in the Bekaa Valley. They basically ambushed his convoy. He managed to escape. He arrived at his headquarters where I and a bunch of reporters were waiting for him with bullet holes in the side of his armor-plated Chevrolet Caprice, his dark blue Chevrolet Caprice. And eventually he was sent out to Tripoli. And there was another intra-Palestinian war that took place that year up in Tripoli, Lebanon, northern Lebanon. I'm sorry, he was sent to Tunis, and then the battle was up in Tripoli. So it was a very strange little war. There's a chapter in my book called Hungry Guns, Exploding Cats that it tells you about this. We would drive up 2 hours in the morning from Beirut, go observe the war from one side or the other for a couple of hours, and then drive back to Beirut and file our dispatches. It was one of the weirdest, most surreal experiences I've ever had in my life. And one of these days, I was up with another correspondent from Czechoslovakia at the time. We were up in the mountains afterwards having a couple bottles of wine. And all of a sudden, he stops and says, "Oh, can you hear that?" And I listened. I said, "Those aren't American planes." And then we saw them coming towards us, and they were French super étendards. And I said, "Oh, that's the French, all of them." There were five of them up in the air. That's about all that they had on their carrier. And I said, "Something's going on." So we had another bottle of wine. About 20 minutes later, the planes come back. The next day, we learned that they had been going to the Bekaa Valley to Baalbek to bomb the Iranian militia group that had blown up the U.S. Marines and the French Marines in Beirut that October of 1983. And I learned many, many years later, we were supposed to have been with them. The Americans were supposed to have been with them, but the American participation was called off by Secretary of Defense Cap Weinberger because he never learned the intelligence that the Iranians had been behind that attack on the U.S. Marine Corps. We had hard intelligence of it. We had actually an intercept of a cable, and that intercept was never passed to the Secretary of Defense. And I learned later it was his military aide, a colonel named Colin Powell, who never delivered the message.
That's absurd. Unbelievable.
It is, and the justification then, and I think the justification I've heard so many times since about not responding to Iranian aggression, to Iranian attacks, is that, oh my gosh, Iran is too big a country, that nationalism is too strong, we cannot attack Iran because, it would be really like kicking the hornet's nest. Just let them do it.
Yeah, but you don't decide at the lower level. I mean, you give the leaders all the information for them to decide one way or another. You don't withhold the information and prevent them from having the information to decide.
Well, I think that's right. I interviewed Cap Weinberger about it, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of the Navy at the time, John Lehman, the head of Naval, Chief of Naval Operations, and they all told me, those other people told me about the intercept because they had seen it, but it didn't get to Cap Weinberger, and it was Colin Powell who arrogated unto himself the authority to keep it from the Secretary of Defense because he said, "Oh no, this is too dangerous."
Isn't that treason, though? Well, that's for another subject.
It's unbelievable. Well, it's unbelievable. It's certainly arrogant. It's certainly an extraordinary arrogance.
Well, it's way beyond that. I think. I think it's criminal. But let's move on. Ken, you've been putting out some provocative tweets about your new book, and I'd like you to talk about it. One's kind of interesting. Which is more dangerous, a gorgeous Swedish woman with a Glock 19, which of course is a 9mm pistol, or a Palestinian teenager with an AK-47?
And I got to tell you, in reality, it's a toss-up. But no, it's a Palestinian teenager with an AK-47, especially when there are no adults around, as I understood. I experienced myself in that Beirut cellar in 1982 in the end when we could have just been shot like that on for nothing, just on a completely on a whim. But the beautiful Swedish woman with a Glock 19 is pretty fearsome as well. Watch out. I have a wife who fits that bill, and I would not like to be on the other side of her Glock 19.
Yeah, well, it's a 15-round magazine and a 9mm pistol. That's a lot of bullets.
Okay. Yes, it is. And she's a good shot.
Okay, let's go on. Who was the little drummer girl in reality, and how did she behave in Beirut?
This is really interesting. Some of you may remember John le Carré's wonderful novel called The Little Drummer Girl. It was about Palestinian terrorists and about an Israeli plan, intelligence plan, to kill one of these terrorists by luring him into a love affair with the little drummer girl, this woman who was supposed to be very pro-Palestinian. Well, it turns out there was an American freelance journalist named Janet Stevens, who's from the Midwest, who was known as the little drummer girl in Beirut in the summer of 82. And in fact, she squired John le Carré around some of the very places where I was when I was held hostage. At one point, she came down into the cellar where I was with these other people. She was not with le Carré. She was an American journalist at the time. And I was with the French Foreign Legionnaire. And we had a Judas in the window, which is a small sliding a slot where you can pass food in or shout out. And so we whistled the Marseillaise to her first, and she didn't flinch. And then I said, no, they're Americans. So then we whistled the Star-Spangled Banner, and she became frightened, absolutely terrified. And the American journalist grabbed her hand and said, turn around. You did not hear that. They were terrified that the only thing keeping them from being where we were was the goodwill of a couple of kids, 13-year-old kids with Kalashnikovs. They eventually got out. They never told the U.S. Embassy there were Americans in that jail. And ultimately, Janet Stevens herself was killed on April 18th, 1983, the next year, at the U.S. Embassy when she was sitting in the cafeteria with a CIA officer begging with him to give more aid to the Palestinians.
Wow. Okay. What about a journalist? Should he help his country in time of war or stand back and watch as fellow citizens get killed, as Mike Wallace once said he'd do in Vietnam?
Yeah, there's that famous story about Mike Wallace, and I really take issue to it. He said, if I had been, I were on patrol with the Viet Cong and they told me they were about to attack a group of Americans, I wouldn't have said a thing. I certainly wouldn't have warned the Americans. Well, sorry, I would have. I was tested about that. When my country is going to war, I will do whatever I can. As we were going to war with Saddam Hussein the first time in 1990, 91, I had, because I was a defense correspondent, I was based in Paris, I'd been to Iraq many, 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 many times. I'd interviewed every arms dealer who was there in Iraq, published lots of stories and published a book about the arms trade. But I knew what the French were selling, and the French weren't telling the Americans. One day I had a lunch.
All right, 30 seconds, please.
With the air attaché at the embassy, and he says, can you help us out? We need to get in there. We need to understand what the French radar are all about. I said, look, I'll talk pro-American French people I know. And I helped them, and we got in there with Apache aircraft, took out those radars, and the rest is history.
Okay, Ken, thank you very much. We are coming up on the second break. Before the third segment of today's show, you're listening to Middle East Radio Forum here on 960 The Patriot. My name is William Wolfe. I'm your host today. Next Sunday will be Farley Weiss. He'll be my guest. Then Mayor Jalovitz will be the final Sunday, the following Sunday after that. And I thank you for spreading the word about this show, and I thank you especially for helping me bring the show by using the services of the advertisers. Often it costs you nothing to support the show. What I mean by that is just switch where you're spending money, to somebody who does not, to somebody who does advertise on this program. And that way, you will be getting great goods and services, and you'll be helping Middle East Radio Forum. But it's very important to always let the advertiser know that you're doing so because they advertise on this program. They need to know that their advertising dollars are being well spent. Direct donations, of course, are always welcome. My address, 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203, Phoenix, 85020. Make a check to me, William J. Wolf, and that'll help, especially if you're not able to use the services of the advertisers. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Friends of the Israel Defense Forces offers educational, cultural, recreational, and social services that provide hope, purpose, and life-changing support for the soldiers who protect Israel. FIDF is the sole organization authorized to collect donations on behalf of the soldiers of the IDF. For more information or to make a donation, please visit FIDF.org or call 323-843-2690. Watermark Wealth Strategies and Watermark Wealth Planning Offices at 11333 North Scottsdale Road, Suite 295 in Scottsdale has been a loyal sponsor of this program since its start. They specialize in wealth retention, estate, and legacy planning. Watermark has been a leader in the Valley, and its members have been together for over 17 years. Founding partner Carmen Ciccone has over 36 years of experience in tax, investment, and estate planning issues affecting retirees and their assets. They offer comprehensive planning that has helped assist families through the process of identifying client objectives and concerns and constructing a strategic plan to address tax, risk, and legacy issues. Consultations are complimentary, and we encourage you to contact Allison Porter at 480-442-3989 to schedule. Securities offered through Kestra Investment Services, LLC, member FINRA/SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Kestra Advisory Services, LLC, an affiliate of Kestra Investment Services. Watermark Wealth Strategies, LLC, is not affiliated with Kestra Investment Services or Kestra Advisory Services.
Gilligan's on Maryland, on the northwest corner of 7th Street in Maryland, is much more than just a great Shell station and mini-mart. Great cook-to-order food, different flavors of coffee and tea, beer and fine wine, including kosher wine, round out a wonderful one-stop shopping experience. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum, check them out in the northwest corner of 7th Street in Maryland in Phoenix. That's Gilligan's on Maryland. Phone number 602-277-6269.
Veggie Village, the best vegan restaurant in Arizona, has a second location, still at 1255 East Northern, now also at 15577 North Hayden Road, Suite C103 in Scottsdale. Chicken, beef, calamari, shrimp, and more, all made out of plants, all a delight to their taste buds. You just have to try it for yourself. Not open on Sunday on Northern, but open 7 days in Scottsdale. Give them a try, and you will be back for more. I am William Wolf, creator of Middle East Radio Forum and an injury attorney in practice since 1971. I was awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association. I only advertise on the show where you can get to know me and my values. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. Please give me a call if you have need for an injury attorney at 602-279-1914.
You're listening to the Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free, 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@AOL.com. That's radioforum@AOL.com. Now back to your host, Attorney William J. Wolf.
Welcome back to today's edition of Middle East Radio Forum. My name is William Wolf. My guest is Ken Timmerman. I thank Ken very much for being my guest today. He's been on several times, always a terrific presentation. And we're going to be kind of jumping around a little bit because there's some questions I want to have answered. Ken, what was Lebanese-Iranian super agent Imad Mughniyeh's first major terrorist operation?
Imad Mughniyeh, the Lebanese Hezbollah chief of military operations until 9/11, the world's most wanted terrorist, the man who had the most American blood on his hand through terrorist operations. He got his start in attacking America on April 18th, 1983 in Beirut, that same attack on the embassy I was there at the time as a young journalist that took the life of Janet Stevens. It killed 61 people altogether. 19 Americans perished, most of them CIA officers, because they were having a regional-wide meeting. Mugnié graduated from that first attack to then orchestrate later that year the twin truck bombings of U.S. Marines and French Marines in Beirut that killed 241 Marines and 63 French Marines. So he racked up very quickly a high death toll with spectacular operations against the United States. He went on to kidnap CIA station chief William Buckley. He took TWA flight 77. I forget the number of this TWA flight, but he hijacked the TWA flight and killed a U.S. Navy diver, Robbie Steedham. Then went to Iran, went to ground, helped Al Qaeda with their first simultaneous attack. That was in 1998 when they blew up two of our embassies in Africa, hundreds of miles apart. And after that, he helped them with 9/11. So he became the brains behind the 9/11 attacks. I will say, thank God, he has gone to meet his maker, and he's roasting in those flames right now, and he will be for a long, long time.
Okay. Now, I understand you know what the inside of a Mossad safe house really looks like. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, and it's not always quite so glamorous as you might think from some of the novels you might read about the Mossad characters and renting chateaus and all of that. So when I worked briefly with Mossad and Uri Nubrani on a hostage negotiation, the first real operational meeting was in London. I was on my way to the Farnborough Air Show and was given an address in the part of London I didn't know too well. No name on the door, go into this kind of townhouse where I'm met by Uri Nubrani, a colonel from Israeli military intelligence, and a couple of other people, and basically interviewed for this operation that we were going to conduct. They wanted me to be their front man to help to get a Israeli hostage out. It was a very ordinary apartment, nothing fancy. But I will say this, they did have a well-stocked bar. Uri knew that I liked to drink wine, so he had a well-stocked bar. He had wine and other refreshments for me from getting off of the airplane. But we went on to Geneva to actually do this operation, and they had a whole team of Mossad counterintelligence, counter-surveillance people protecting me to make sure that the Hezbollah folks didn't kidnap me, as well as the Israelis they already had.
I'm wondering, you ever read any of Daniel Silva's books?
Well, that's what I was referring to with the chateau, yes. And by the way, I happen to know a little secret about those books that not very many people do. I have met that the his main character Gabriel Allon is an artist and a restorer of paintings. I happen to have met the man who was in many ways the precursor or the real life avatar of that Gabriel Allon. I became very good friends of his as well. He worked with Uri Nubrani and worked for Mossad for 39 years before he retired. And the way that you know what he did in life was through his book of paintings. And you see the date lines on the paintings: Basra, Iraq, 1955. Some god awful place in Iran or in Syria or in Ethiopia or this place or that place. So he would date line a painting from some of those places. It was the only way that you knew publicly about his Mossad career and where he had been posted.
Okay, I've got to stop you there. We are coming up on the final break before the final segment. Thankfully, the final segment is the longest segment of the show. You're listening to Middle East Radio Forum here on 960 The Patriot. My name is William Wolf. I'm your host today. I will be with you also next Sunday, and I thank you very much for listening, and I thank you for spreading the word about this show. And as always, I know I do this a lot, but it's very important because this is a brokered show, actually the longest-running brokered show in the history of the state of Arizona. And the only reason I'm able to do that is because I have great listeners who patronize my great advertisers. And it's very important to let them know that your advertising dollars are being well spent by telling them that you're there because they advertise on Middle East Radio Forum. Again, direct donations are welcome. If you can't get to one of the advertisers, you can send a check to me, William J. Wolf, at my office, 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203, Phoenix 85020. Again, that address, 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203, Phoenix, Arizona 85020. I very much appreciate direct donations, but really the best way to support the show is to use the services of the advertisers. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with Ken Timmerman for the final segment of today's show. I am William Wolf, creator of Middle East Radio Forum and an injury attorney in practice since 1971. I was awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association. I only advertise on the show where you can get to know me and my values. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. Please give me a call if you have need for an injury attorney at 602-279-1914.
Gilligan's on Maryland, on the northwest corner of 7th Street and Maryland, is much more than just a great Shell station and mini mart. Great cook-to-order food, different flavors of coffee and tea, beer and fine wine, including kosher wine, round out a wonderful one-stop shopping experience. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum, check them out in the northwest corner of 7th Street and Maryland in Phoenix. That's Gilligan's on Maryland. Phone number 602-277-6269.
Cherry Blossom Noodle Cafe has terrific sushi, salads, rice and noodle dishes, soup, and even great pasta. On the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback, it will become your favorite Asian restaurant. A loyal sponsor of Middle East Radio Forum for more than 10 years, it is simply the best place for a great Asian lunch or dinner. That's Cherry Blossom Noodle Cafe on the northwest corner of 10th Street and Camelback. Tell them that William Wolf sent you there. Telephone 602-248-9090.
Texas Grill on the northeast corner of Bethany Home Road and 16th Street has been my favorite steakhouse for 31 years. Great food, especially their chicken fried steak, as well as daily specials in a comfortable setting, keeps me coming back for more. You just have to try it for yourself. Also a great Sunday brunch starting at 10 in the morning. That's Texas Grill on the northeast corner of Bethany Home Road and 16th Street. Give them a try and you will have a new favorite steakhouse too. My name is William J. Wolf, host of Middle East Radio Forum since 2003. As you may know, I am a personal injury attorney in practice since 1971. I was just awarded the high honor of Trial Attorney of the Year by the Arizona Trial Lawyers Association. I handle all types of personal injury and wrongful death cases. Unlike many other attorneys, especially the high-volume TV advertising attorneys, I do go to court if necessary to obtain the best possible resolution for all my clients. It is often impossible to obtain the best possible result if your lawyer does not have the reputation of being willing to go to court on all matters. If you have a claim, please call me for a free initial consultation at 602-279-1914. My office is at 7301 North 16th Street, Suite 203 in Phoenix. Again, call 602-279-1914. I look forward to meeting you and making sure that you obtain the best possible recovery. Call 602-279-1914 and please continue to support Middle East Radio Forum.
You're listening to the Middle East Radio Forum on 960 The Patriot. To join in the conversation, call anytime at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Outside of the Valley, call toll-free 888-960-9696. Questions are also welcome at radioforum@aol.com. That's radioforum@aol.com. Now back to your host, Attorney William J. Wolf.
Welcome back to the final segment of today's very, very interesting and important edition of Middle East Radio Forum. My name is William Wolf. My guest is Ken Timmerman, and I very much appreciate the fact that he is on this program on a regular basis, always a tremendous amount of information. And, Ken, I want to get into the latest on the Iran nuclear deal and Israel's opposition to it. But first, before we do that, I would like to ask you, what is the difference for an American investigative reporter between working in Saddam's Iraq and working in France? I mean, it seems pretty obvious, but you can tell us really what the difference is.
Well, it's not as obvious as you might think, Bill. I was shadowed in Iraq all the time. I had a binder from the Ministry of Information. They would track me even when I tried to get rid of them. And there's one scene that I tell in my new book, And the Rest is History, where I was trying to go meet a top military official and left the binder behind, but he still found me. So they were very, very good in Iraq. The French also did that. I had a minder in France. It took many years before the guy came out of the closet. Finally, he sat down with me and said, Ken, I'm from the DST, which is their equivalent of the FBI. And remember, I was doing a lot of sensitive stuff. I was putting out a newsletter called Middle East Defense News, which was full of intelligence information, information about terrorism, about hostage ransom payments, about arms dealers. And the French were very, very eager to know exactly what I was doing, especially if they could get a bit of a heads up. And they said, look, we need to talk to you. We need to kind of talk to you on a regular basis. And there's two ways we can do this. You know, either I can take you out to lunch once a month or so, and please make sure that you choose the restaurant that is very good because I'm going to pay for it. Or we could do it the hard way. And I said, you know what? I kind of like the idea of lunch. Let's try that and see how it goes. And so for about 4 years, 4 to 5 years, before I finally left France, and I was nearly expelled from France as a spy at a time when I wasn't, this guy and his successors would take me out to lunch once a week. And at one point, he told me, when the government was trying to take away my journalism credentials and expel me, PNG me, as a spy, he told me, Ken, it's time for you to leave. I said, well, wait a minute. We just finished rebuilding our house. We just renovated this house that we moved into. And he said, too bad. It's time for you to go. I've tried to warn you, but you've angered too many people. It's time for you to leave. I ultimately won that battle. But I can tell you, it was no easier working in France than it was in Iraq.
But I would assume it would be less dangerous working in France, wouldn't it?
It was less dangerous, generally speaking. It was certainly more pleasant because the restaurants were better. But there was one point when he warned me to keep, he asked me if my wife drove our youngest daughter to daycare anymore. I said, yes, she did. She does. He said, well, you know, she really should stop doing that. You should go out and open the car ahead of time. And I said, what? I went to London, spoke to a friend I was working with at Kroll Associates at that point, and he was a former chief of Middle East operations at MI6. And he said, oh, my. He told you to open the doors? And I said, yeah, that's right. He told me to open the doors. He said, oh, my. I said, what do you mean, oh, my? What's this? He said, well, it's a matter of physics. If there's a bomb in your car and you open the doors ahead of time, you or your wife might have some chance of surviving. But if you don't, you'll just get blown up completely. And, yes. And so that was in France. So, yes, it was generally safer for most people, but there were threats there as well. And the French played hardball. And they played hardball with me.
It's fascinating, and sure that nobody in my audience has ever heard anything similar. I thank you for sharing that with us. I do want to get to the latest on the Iran nuclear deal and Israel's fierce opposition to it. I don't understand why the United States is doing this. Iran says that the United States is the great Satan that they want to destroy. Israel, of course, is just the little Satan that they want to destroy. Why is the United States getting into this deal? Why does the United States allow all these funds to flow to Iran, knowing they're going to be used to create atomic weapons?
First, let's look at the reasons that they're not doing it. They're not doing this to make the world a safer place. They're not doing this to slow down or stop the Iranian nuclear weapons program. They're not doing it because it will put cramp the style of Iran's foreign terrorist operations. They're not doing it because they want to hurt the Iranian regime. So what does that leave you? It's a very odd deal. The 2015 deal was an odd deal as well. There's a faction of the Democrat Party in the United States which has an absurd, illogical, irrational attitude, a romantic attitude, I guess, towards the Islamic State of Iran. And they believe that the mullahs in Tehran are better friends to America than the Jewish state of Israel. It's an extraordinary mindset, Bill, and I cannot explain it any other way because there is no strategic reasoning for doing this deal. We had them exactly where we wanted them when Trump pulled out in 2018. The regime was being crippled by sanctions. They were having problems acquiring technology. They were having problems selling their oil. they were getting ready to make some kind of deal, and it would have been a very, very different deal if they had made it with President Trump. Now they're winning. Now they see a president who is willing to basically give them whatever they want, nearly $1 trillion in oil revenues over 7 years they're going to get. $1 trillion. It's phenomenal.
But why, Ken? Please explain, why would we do that? It's just insanity.
Well, it is insanity, and I, Bill, this is, I have no logical, rational explanation. That's why I explained to you all the reasons they weren't doing it, because there's no rational reason for it. It is not making us more secure. It is not making Israel more secure. It is not making the Middle East more secure. It is not helping the Iranian people. It is this mindset in the Democrat Party that goes back to Carter. And I'll tell you a quick little anecdote about Carter that I heard from the former head of the French intelligence service, the DGSE. When Desert One had failed to liberate the hostages in April 1980, Carter was desperate. He turned to the French, "Can you help me?" And the head of the DGSE said, "Sure I can. We can kidnap the Ayatollah, and we will fly him out to a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf, and then you can negotiate." And Carter said, "Oh, no, we can't do that. He's a man of God." That's the kind of people we're dealing with.
That's really sick. Okay. But what is the latest now on what's going on and about Israel's fierce opposition to it? And is Israel fiercely opposed to it? I'm not sure what the leadership of Israel is really trying to do. And if you heard Yoni talking at the beginning of the show, I'm not sure if he is either.
Well, I can only go on their public comments at this point. I've not been to Israel recently to have those discussions face-to-face. But as I read the tea leaves, and you see what Israel is doing in Syria, the deterrent level against Israel taking military action has been going down steadily over the past 3 to 4 years. They've been operating militarily with impunity in Syria, and it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Syria to Iran, should they be forced to take military action there. They just recently, this past week, hit an Iranian base in Syria, and as Yoni said, they took out 1,000 rockets there, and they will be doing more of this. And what do the Iranians do? Nothing, because they can do nothing. So I think Israel sees the downside of a military operation against Iran's nuclear weapons program very differently today than they did, say, 4 or 5 years ago under Bibi, when Bibi thought it would be more dangerous in the end to attack Iran than to launch non-kinetic attacks. So I think they are serious, and I think Biden understands it, and he's probably threatening the Israelis. Their national security advisor was sitting with Jake Sullivan this past week in Washington, and I'm sure he got an earful. And he said, "Oh, well, we're going to cut off this, we're going to cut off that," Jake Sullivan was probably telling him. But we'll have to see. The deal is a disaster, and it does virtually guarantee that Iran will become a nuclear weapon state, and we will have no tools to disarm them except for war.
Well, doesn't the United States leadership have family? Don't they have wives, children, grandchildren? Don't they care about what's going to happen? I mean, it just, I don't understand. I guess I'm not smart enough to understand why the United States would be acting in this way.
Bill, when you are afflicted with a mindset, people on CNN, anchors on CNN or MSNBC, they saw Donald Trump and they saw the devil incarnate. You could not reason with them. You could not say, "Well, Trump has secured the border. Well, Trump has helped the economy. Well, Trump has made us stronger vis-a-vis communist China. Trump has made us better towards Iran." No. None of that. They saw none of it. So these Democrats have a mindset, and it goes like this. Iran is not a threat. Islamic Iran is not a threat because we the Democrats, are their friends. They would never attack us. They would never do anything against us. That's what they believe, even though all the evidence goes against it.
Well, I can't explain insanity, and you probably can't either. I don't know how we go forward from this point forward. I mean, I have no power in terms of this. I just have this radio show, and I'm just trying to express my frustration at the insanity of not taking care of Iran in terms of preventing them from being able to do what they say they're going to do. So,
well, Bill, we will learn whether the entire Democrat Party has leapt onto this, has become insane, when we hear what Chuck Schumer is going to do. Remember the last time in 2015, Schumer prevented Obama from introducing this as a treaty because he said it will not pass the Senate and I will not support it. Schumer, a Democrat. Let's see how he acts today. If he acts the same way, I'll say at least there are some pockets of sanity left inside the Democrat Party.
We'll address that the next time you're on the show, which I hope will be pretty soon. I want to ask you about when did Iran, the mullahs, first draw American blood? And I understand it wasn't with any hostage crisis.
Right. And so everybody thinks of the hostage crisis in 1979. And the real first blood that they took was when they blew up our embassy in Beirut in 1982. And we did nothing to retaliate. And that was so serious, Bill, that ever since then, the Iranians have believed that they can get away with any kind of attack on America and we will do nothing. I know this. As a fact, I know it personally from the mouth of the son of the commander of the Revolutionary Guard, Mohsen Rezai's son, who lived in my basement for 6 months in Kensington, Maryland, in the late 1990s. And he told me this is how his father would speak to all of his friends. His father, commander of the Revolutionary Guard, would say, "We force the Americans out of Lebanon with their tail between their legs. We blew up their embassy. We blew up their Marines, and they did nothing. America will do nothing against us." And we didn't. And so far, we haven't.
And he may be right, unfortunately. And so far, the evidence is that he has been right, which I don't understand.
So far, the evidence is that he's been right. That's correct.
Yeah. I tell you, the longer I do this show, the more frustrated I get. I think it's very important to keep doing the show to get this information out. But I feel so powerless in terms of doing anything other than trying to get this in the airways. And maybe that's going to help. But this country seems to be spinning out of control right now. And there's so many things.
Well, the more people who have this information, Bill, the better off we are. Because they can talk to their members of Congress, to their senators. They can say, look, this Iran deal is completely insane. Do not support it. Hold it up. Do whatever you can to make sure it does not go into force, or that it does not limit a future president, whether it's a President Trump or DeSantis or someone else, but that it does not limit a future president from pulling out. Because that's what the Iranians really want to do. They want to put restrictions on the next president.
Well, the deal that Obama got into didn't really have the force of law, did it? It was just maybe, an executive order? And that's not a treaty.
That's right. It was an executive agreement, which means that any future executive could simply cancel it. This one is not going to be a treaty yet unless Chuck Schumer agrees to it. So that's how, as I say, we will see if there's any pocket of rationality left in the Democrat Party. If Schumer says we're going to vote on this as a treaty, then, my gosh, then we are truly doomed. And it is so ironic. I mean, for me, you know where I stand politically, Bill, and our listeners do too. But to hear me say our salvation depends on an action of Chuck Schumer, wow, we're far gone.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what would happen. Let's say they did not pass it as a treaty. Does Biden do what Obama did and just do it as an executive action with almost the same results?
Well, that's what he's going to have to do. But the Iranians are trying to figure some way that they can include in the agreement a penalty, whether it's a financial penalty or some other penalty, in front of the U.N. Security Council on the future president of the United States if he pulls out. That's the guarantee that they're looking for. And by the way, that's what's been holding this whole thing up for months and months now.
Yep. Okay, Ken, I can give you one more minute, then I have to close the show. Go ahead, please.
Well, I hope all of our listeners will come on to my website, kentimmerman.com. I put out weekly emails. They're not very long, and they usually include a link or two of either some appearance I've done on Newsmax or a radio show or this show, or an article that I've written. It's really very short, I try to make them a little funny as well. So it's kentimmerman.com, and you'll see a pop-up where you can just put in your name and your address. I do not sell your names or addresses. I wouldn't know who to sell them to. But the website is fun. All of my latest information is up there, and my book, And the Rest is History, Tales of Hostages, Arms Dealers, Dirty Tricks, and Spies. Order it now. You'll get it on Tuesday. It's a heck of a read.
Ken, thank you so much. I look forward to the next time you're on the show. I very much appreciate your being an asset to Middle East Radio Forum. Next Sunday, I will have another returning guest. Farley Weiss will be here to discuss the Biden plan for the Middle East and Israel. He calls it a disaster in the making. You'll have a chance to give him a call and ask him what he's talking about. He's also a very interesting guest on Middle East Radio Forum, been on here many times. Please do spread the word about this show, available everywhere in the world on the website, MiddleEastRadioForum.com. You can also listen to podcasts anytime you like. And remember, the show is rebroadcast on this station every Saturday at 9 p.m., so you have a chance to listen without pulling up the podcast. But the podcasts are great because you can listen anytime you like, and you can listen to a lot of different old shows, not just the last one that was presented. Thanks for listening. I hope everybody has a wonderful day.
She's looking for
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.